This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for the final installment in our draft countdown series. We're going to talk about the edges today, one of the most important positions to the Ravens. Joining me, one of the really knowledgeable guys we have on this show whenever we can, and that's John Ledyard. John, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it. Always enjoy talking ball with you.
It's great to have you. John primarily covers the Steelers and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but he also is a very good NFL generalist, very well known in terms of his NFL draft takes, and a guy we love having on the show whenever we can get him for whatever. Last year, we had him for both a Steelers and a Bucs show, preview show, which is always great. But tonight, we're talking about the edge position and one very important to the Ravens, who are paper thin at the position. Adafi Owe will be on his 50-year contract. Kyle Van Noy also only signed through 2025 on a one-year deal. Plus, you know, given his age, he could always be in the last year of his career. A position group where the Ravens have always been able to find talent in the UFA pools, and they've been extremely good at finding veteran talent. Van Noy, one of those guys. Of course, Clowney, we looked a few years ago to Justin Houston. JPP, they got a little bit of more blood from that stone at the end of his career. So it's been certainly something the Ravens have been exceptionally good at. It does beg the question, if you have an ability, if you think you have an ability to do that, or can any office really make that claim, front office, should that be a strategy to avoid spending a lot of money or draft capital on the edge position?
Yeah, it's an interesting philosophy. I mean, I think that generally speaking, you should spend a decent amount on the position, but not just for anybody, right? You don't want to tie yourself to players who can't rush the passer at this position in terms of what you're paying. It's a premium, and teams really value run defense, and they should. Like, overall, I think you need like just general stability at this position on all three downs. But I think you have to have guys that get after the quarterback and rush the passer, and I think that that's a really important trait. So, you know, if you have those guys, great, but ultimately those guys rarely just hit free agency. And so, you know, you sort of get weird situations, right? Like Hassan Reddick hitting free agency this past year off a real down year, but also not really a down year on the field. So like, is he, you know, what kind of a contract do you give him? He's a little bit older, but you know, the 4 years before this past one, he was one of the better edge pass rushers in the league. So you kind of have to look for those kind of loophole situations. Can you, you know, I'm naming two guys actually that the Bucs have signed now, but the Shaq Barrett thing, right? Where you sign him for 1 year, what was it, $4 million? Like just a, you know, a dart throw at a guy who had shown some traits, but hadn't gotten a big opportunity yet to play a ton. You should always be looking for those kinds of investments in free agency, but you definitely want to be careful who you give major money to, because I think you can, there's a lot of good players, but like you want to be able to have, if you're paying top dollar, that guy needs to be a great pass rusher. And, you know, the Bears with Montez Sweat are kind of in that. Is he a great passer? They paid him all his money. Is he the great pass rusher they envision he is? Is he good enough? Do they need to now go out and spend high end capital on a number two guy to be, or their number one guy, you know, even though he's not going to be paid like it? That's so, it puts you in a quandary when you're in that spot.
So all the Ravens guys have been vet minimum incentives to five kind of guys, or 3 million incentives to six. They haven't been any big money deals, and the Ravens, frankly, would I don't think they'd ever entertain such a deal. They've been so good at getting the cheap guys, but they think they can find people 32, 33 years old who could still rush the passer. It is a very big group, by the way. It's a lot of guys like that who still think they can play in the NFL. So that at least is kind of nice. After you get through those, the big two, though, Vaughn and Van Noy, your dad, Tavius Robinson, is the third best edge the Ravens had. He's played well on early downs. He really hasn't blossomed as a pass rusher. He's part of an early down pairing, used to be last year, with a now current Steeler, Malik Harrison, in the Ravens' base defense, you know, as a run defensive pairing. And then you've got the enigma, David Ajabo, who will be entering his fourth year. I don't think he's a sure thing to make the team by any stretch. I'm sure he comes to camp, but and maybe everything has changed, but his development, honestly, derailed by the injury he suffered in training for, I believe, his pro day, which was could have been designated as an NFI and extended throughout the season in which he's drafted. But unfortunately, the Ravens didn't do that. So he lost that season effectively developmentally, and also lost it in terms of play for the Ravens, where he would be entering his third season and potentially still be somebody the Ravens would have hoped in.
Yeah, so I mean, if you're looking at those guys as sort of like either just role players or not even or fringe roster players, then I mean, this position is probably up there for the Ravens with any on the roster in terms of need. There's no way they can look at last year and say, oh, we're good enough at getting to the quarterback with four, especially when you see the prototypical way the teams are winning right now. You see the 49ers every year. You see the Chiefs every year. You see the Bucs when they won the Super Bowl that year. As much as they were a great blitzing team, they beat Patrick Mahomes barely blitzing at all. The Eagles every single year they're in there. These are some of the great four down and rush teams in the league every single year. And even though there are teams like, for example, the Chiefs and the Bucs that love to blitz, that have been really successful in the playoffs, they have cooled off and pulled back from that in the playoffs and found other ways to win as a defense, because it is so hard to beat the top guys in the playoffs when you're relying on the blitz so much as a team. So you have to be able to go four down and go. And the Ravens just haven't had enough of that juice. The Bills are in a similar reflection right now, I think. Haven't had enough of that juice to be able to win. So you are going to see tons of pass rushers go in the first round of this draft, I think. It is not a great draft in a lot of other positions. I think it's a good edge rusher draft. I don't think it's like an unbelievable one at the top, but there's a lot of good players, and teams just need them so bad. Every team that has kind of faltered in the playoffs is looking to add these guys. They're saying this is the thing that we don't have enough of, that we need to put us over the top. And I think it wouldn't surprise me at all if we have six or seven go in the first round.
Yeah, it's interesting. The Ravens actually had most of their sacks, and they were second in the NFL in sacks this last year, but they had most of their sacks with a four down pass rush. Everybody, all Baltimore fans basically agree with you, John, that the Ravens can't live with their pass rush as it is, and they need it. But they've been screaming that for years, and the Ravens continually address it with these older veteran players that they're trying to get by with. And defensively, they were about the best team in the league down the stretch last year. So once they got their safety problem fixed, I'm not really a guy who says you cannot do without it, but I do think it's the Ravens' biggest need. I think absolutely it is the single biggest need for the Ravens, is to find one edge rusher who can really play, that'll at least replace Adafi Owe, and given they have two expiring contracts, they're in dire straits at the position.
Yeah, I think it's probably their biggest need. I mean, I think there are other needs on this team. I think it's a really important position, so that's why I'd put it up there with their biggest need. And I think in this class, there's something they should look pretty heavily at. I mean, I do have lots of questions about this team at guard, and I think they are a team that probably needs to maximize their offensive line. Last year, I felt like they really did. I thought they had some holes, and they still managed to put out a pretty good group. Like, I think the coaching was really strong there. I think they got them. I mean, I never in a million years would have guessed that Faalale would be able to stick that season out of guard with the way it looked at times. And I'm not saying it was always pretty, but you know, I think he and Voorhees in competition for those guys could be a swap, but it's, you know, in the first round, maybe we'll see how the draft shakes out. I think that there are some potential fits for them in this guard class that could be later in the draft. Obviously there's going to be other positions that fans are always wanting to see addressed too. But I think that this is definitely a team that when you look at them and you say, what are they've got to get over the top, right? That's the key. What's the biggest thing that they need? I think that edge rusher's got to be right up there near the top.
With you, indeed. One guy we didn't mention was the 2024 third-round selection, Adisa Isaac. He was active for just four games, played 32 defensive snaps this last year. Big time for the Ravens to figure out who they have with Adisa Isaac in 25 to make their 26 plans. He doesn't even have to be a regular this year, but they need to find out who he is. And if they get, if it means they play him 200 snaps the whole year, that might be enough to figure it out if they can really rely on him, and whether or not they need to go after Van Noy, another free agent, Maybe it's the question of getting a vet or not getting an additional vet, but they need to find out who Adisa Isaac is this year.
Was Isaac healthy last year?
Mostly he was, and then he became a healthy scratch, but he did have an injury that happened like after the preseason or maybe in the preseason that kept him out for the first few games. And then he got a little bit of playing time, and then he basically was a healthy scratch, or he was active and only played special teams. So it was kind of a lost year for him, honestly.
A lot of picks. They've tried. They just haven't gotten away even to go from a zero sack guys last year college. They've spent a lot. They've invested at this position. They've understood the importance. Obviously with financially, they've been smart about how they've done it, but they've tried to draft and develop it. It hasn't worked. You know, we can go back probably further even than just these guys, you know, to some other guys who were like, okay, you know, Tyus Bowsers and players like that, go back Tim Williams, you know, guys like that, over the years, they've spent a lot at this position in the top three rounds, four rounds of the draft, but haven't gotten a lot of big hits in, you know, ways, probably their best success story that I can think of off the top of my head.
Matthew Judon would be another who was a fifth Judon round
was,
pick.
So yeah, another good one. He was a late pick, I think, right?
Yeah, five.
Fifth round, yeah. So they have gotten some, but they haven't, for as much as they've spent at the position, they would love to have that young stable of homegrown rushers that the Eagles have had or some of these other teams have had in recent years, and not necessarily the way it's gone for them. So developing somebody would be great, but like you said, it may not happen with Isaac or Ojabo at this point, and so perhaps you're in a situation now where you need to, get another guy in the room.
All right. Well, we've done with the Ravens' current situation. We're going to start for the edge top 10 to 1 list. I'll just tell you, my list was built for the Ravens. I don't expect that to be the way you'd build your list at all. I'm sure yours is built on who you like, and it probably has an influence on 4-3 versus 3-4 that might be very different from what I would use.
Yeah, that's quite possible. I mean, I definitely, as you said, obviously didn't build it just for the Ravens, but I'm very interested in the specifics of your board as it pertains to the Ravens and sort of what you see as potential fits, especially because I'm guessing as I go through my guys, one of your main critiques or thoughts will be on, as you talk about my rankings, will be, yeah, you agree or disagree, and then how it pertains to Baltimore, which I think will be good to get that individual team perspective from you. But I've got a lot of thoughts on the edge class in general, and I'm excited to go through these top 10s. I actually have a nice cutoff at 10, whereas I have a tier break. And so tier 4 for me starts at number 11 for my ranking. So this will be a nice clean one, and then we can go through who didn't make the top 10 later on.
That sounds great. So we'll start off with your number 10 guy. Who's that?
I've got Landon Jackson from Arkansas at number 10. Big fan of him when he got to be an actual edge rusher. He played 4-eye a lot, inside eye of the tackle a lot for Arkansas. I think they saw that this is a big, I wouldn't even necessarily say long because his arms aren't like crazy long, but his frame is. Like, he's got these massively long legs, 6'7", 280, 27. I think he was 269 or whatever at the combine. He cut a little bit and tested pretty well, I think, overall for what he did. I think that they saw that frame and they were like, yeah, this guy's going to play inside for us some. Like, he's got one of these, 3-4 defensive end type of frames. We can play 4-5 and he can kind of go inside, outside the tackle and be tight to the formation. He just was not good at 4-eye. Like, he just got washed out all the time in the run game. The pad level's too high. Just is not a good fit for him at all. He's not built like that. And then when he got to play on the edge and he got to work from a 2-point stance, there's not a lot of guys toggling from 4-eye and a 4-point stance to being a wider technique, whether it was a 7 or 9, and rushing off the edge from a 2-point stance. You could really see he's got twitch in his feet. Like, he's explosive. So it wasn't surprising to me. I think it surprised a lot of people. Wasn't surprising to me. I think when you went to the combine and you watched some of the way that he tested and the explosive drills. Now, can he turn the corner? He has flashed the ability to. He beat Will Campbell with a cross chop move and get around the outside edge in that matchup. He had some good reps against Campbell, I think. Some good reps against Calvin Banks. He probably gave Calvin Banks his toughest matchup of the season as well. So it's not every rep. And the disappointing thing with Jackson is you really want to see him be a power rusher because of his frame. He has a bigger edge and he tries. He's physical. He just doesn't really consistently win with power. And maybe he would if he got to work more on the edge, if he got to work more from a three-point stance on the edge. A lot of his edge rushing pass obvious reps come from a two-point stance. I kind of like speed to power conversion more from a three-point stance for some of these guys because it starts you lower, and so your pad level is a little lower on contact point. And so I think there's just more meat on the bone for him as a pure edge. We didn't get to see it enough in college. And so I'd be really excited just to see him in more of a true edge rushing capacity in the league, where I think his run defense can also be better. He just wasn't, everything happened too fast and he was too high in his pads to play on the inside. And so I think on the outside, he's just going to be a better all around player in the NFL. I don't think they'll flirt with the inside outside stuff as much as they did in college. So I think his best ball is ahead of him. I just worry about, can he turn the corner? And I wish he converted speed to power better for this player prototype. I think he's going to have to find out what's my way that I win. And his hands are awesome. And that can be a big point. But I think there's going to have to be athletically, where's my path to the quarterback going to kind of primarily exist is going to be a big question for him.
Okay, that's outstanding stuff. Jackson is my number nine guy, actually, so we're similar on that. Nice. So some of the testing that happened at the combine is what's got Jackson where he is. Not just that he's very recognizable in terms of the hair loss and whatnot, being a Mr. Clean kind of look about him, but he's got a three cone that was outstanding. It's not at the level of Hutchinson. But nobody is. I mean, not even most slot corners are. He was a 7'13" in the three cone. He's got a medical flag for two previous ACL surgeries, which is one of the reasons why I have him a little lower. I should probably have more concerns about his fit with the Ravens because he probably fits more as a 4-3 end than a pure 3-4 guy because he's a 3-4 guy. The Ravens have two things to figure out. One is, can he only play rush linebacker, which a lot of the 4-3 end guys, that's all they're good for. Now, in Jackson's case, pretty damn good speed at 4.68. He might be a guy that could get out and take some snaps in coverage. He has 31 career coverage snaps, 3.4%. He's untested at best as a Sam, but that is typical at the college level that your good pass rushers don't get coverage snaps. And so you have to try and go by traits more than by actual experience as to who might be able to take on a bigger coverage role. That Sam role is wide open for the Ravens. Kyle Van Noy will be 1 year. There's nobody else who could do it on the Ravens. So they need somebody this draft who can take over a portion of those. OA could possibly be the guy. He's also, of course, they're at risk of losing him after the 2025 season. I think one of the things I really liked about his play was he had very solid recognition of who has the ball on boot plays. I cannot stand backside edges who get caught on the boot play chasing the zone direction of the football instead of and losing the boot. He was pretty good at that, I thought. A very good pursuit down the line of scrimmage makes him one of the better run defenders, I think. And I think you've hit a nail on the head in terms of pass rushing. Is he's got to figure out how he can get to the quarterback. What's his ideal way? Chuck Smith will work wonders with him. You know, a guy who you have a lot of tools here with Landon Jackson. You have length, you have good violent hands, and I think he can teach a guy like that how to improve and find some new ways to get to the quarterback. He gives the potentially as a Sam linebacker, going back to that one for one more second, gives the Ravens a hulking presence that I really like in a short zone defender. Tyus Bowser had that too. Jackson's even bigger at 6'6", and being a guy that's very hard to throw over. Kyle Hamilton has that, for example, is extremely useful. So I think he's a guy that could make sense for the Raven. And if I'm trying to match him to where I think he would fit, he's a good pick at 59 for value. Probably does not last to that point, would be my guess. What do you think? Percentage chance he lasts to 59. Can I handicap that?
Yeah, point? I would guess you're probably right that he doesn't. I'm so bad at predicting the draft because I pay no attention. I don't read any mock drafts. Like, you hear enough things that you kind of get an idea. It seemed like his stock was sort of up after the combine. You know, the three cone and the shuttle typically matter to me quite a bit, Ken. And this three cone is actually okay, but I actually didn't think it was three cone was going to be very good. Like, so I'm a little bit surprised. Mm-hmm. His shuttle was awful. That was right at his pro days. And so I'm like, you know, when you watch him, I get the sense that I don't think he's going to be a traditional type of player at edge. And I think he might have enough game where he can win despite not being a traditional type of player. He was the first player I watched for this draft cycle. So I've seen, just kind of filtering through more games after, a ton of his tape. And I just felt like, as I watched him, I'm like, I don't know if he's going to fit into a box. Like, who do you compare him to? I don't know. I'm not exactly sure who the player is in the league that he wins. Like, I don't know if I'd call him an outlier because he has enough traits that he wouldn't need to be an athletic or physical outlier. But the more I watched him, the more I felt, yeah, he doesn't like bend like normal guys do, but he still corners. He knows how to angle his body. He gets his hips and his feet angled to the pocket. Most of the time, you have to have bend to be able to win high side. And I think he's found a way to do it anyway. So I think he's going to be sort of a non-traditional type in terms of his play style. And I think he might find success doing that anyway. He also plays so freaking hard. Like, he just plays so hard and relentless. And he's such a team first guy, and the teams rave, Arkansas people rave about him, coaches rave about him. So he's going to check a lot of boxes for teams. They're going to feel comfortable. I just ultimately, what's the ceiling? I think I feel confident he can be a part of the room. What's the ceiling? Is he an every down guy? Is he a dominant guy? I'm not so sure about that type of an ascension. Yeah, for him.
He is, in a sense, a kind of a build your defense around the guy also. There's enough talent there that you could consider. And I think that addresses what the point you just made is that I think the Ravens could play some uncovered nickel with him on the field and use him as a down lineman and effectively a four-man front on early downs, have only one outside linebacker on the field, and you know, have five defensive backs still with two inside linebackers. I think that could work with him. I think he's probably enough of an athlete to do that. We'll see. And I'd be excited to get him at 59. I wouldn't, obviously he's not in the cards at 27, but or maybe not obviously, but I don't see any way they draft him at 27. And he's probably one of the players who splits the goalpost there between those two picks.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Probably a good way to look at it. I think he's going to be somebody that's of interest to the Bills at the end of the first, maybe, you know, to the Chiefs at some point. I think those types of teams, like, he definitely could fit, slot in the, perhaps Philly even, you know, they've lost some people. Like, I think there's some teams that are going to be interested in him. Those teams, he'd probably be like a role guy. He wouldn't be an every down snap, need to be our number one type of guy for a lot of those teams. And so they're more come fit into the scheme of what we do. And I think those kind of teams that are four down type of teams that say, hey, you can be a cog in the machine. You can be the 25 snaps a game type of guy for us. And you can be impactful even if teams decide to, you know, throw on early down or run on whatever. You know, I think no matter what happens in the down and distance game, you can still be a guy we can put on the field and not feel like you're a liability or costing us any, which, you know, the Chiefs get a guy like Josh Uche last year. I think they're like, well, when do we actually get him on the field? You know, it's a nice idea in theory, but if we can't play him on any situation, we think they're going to run the ball. And I think Jackson, you don't have those same fears if he's playing, again, outside the tackle a little bit more. So his versatility could be a strength as well.
All right, great. We'll move on to my number 10 guy, and I think we're doing okay on time here, but we probably need to pick it up just a little. And that's JT Tuimoloau from Ohio State. Yeah. Always have trouble with that name, no matter how many times I've heard it or said it. Very technically advanced player, outstanding results at Ohio State. Run, pass, coverage defender, does all those things pretty well. Doesn't necessarily project all that well to the next level. I still think he's a guy you take a chance on in round two at the latest, but he's a guy I think that it's not obvious, as well as he played at Ohio State, that what he did is all about who he is, as opposed to beating a level of talent that's a level lower than the NFL, and also the guys around him at Ohio State. Just having a set of players there. But 6'4", 265, he's got very long arms at 33 and three quarters, which are one of the real positive attributes, and a 4.62 40 measured on an other. So obviously this is not a combine measurement. We look at that with a jaundiced eye, as I always say on this show. And he is turning 22 in May. So that's one of the really nice things. He's a younger player in this draft. There aren't a lot of the edges who are younger. There are a few, but there aren't a lot of the edges who are younger players. I always like to see the guys who test in everything. At their pro day or at the combine, either one. And he had plus results across the board. Now there's some pro day results in there. I still believe he generally is a plus athlete across the board. I looked at two things in terms of pass rush statistics, pass rush metrics for this draft. The first is pass rush productivity, which is the PFF stat they use. And it uses their kind of, I won't call them phony baloney, but they're somewhat suspect, pressures, sacks, and quarterback hits, where they give, you know, multiple credit on some sacks to various people. He was 10th in finish rate, which is either get a sack or a quarterback hit, at 58% of all of the 408 guys who had 200 or more pass rush snaps. Now that's got to mean something. That's a terrific finish rate. He did get some of that as a cleanup guy, and that's what I meant about the other people. He was also 30th in pass rush production, which is much more based on pressures and is a lot about how do you get the first pressure for that. So he is a guy who I think did very well in both those categories, and it's very unusual to see a guy who's good in both. You know, a lot of guys who are good at one in this draft. 39 stops to just 6 missed tackles. Folks out there have heard me use that for inside linebackers a lot as the strikeout to walk ratio. That's a very good 6.5-to-1 relationship that you like to see for an outside linebacker. There's some guys who are a lot worse, and there's only a couple guys better. What else to say about him? I think he uses his length well. If we look at the guys in this draft, there's some long guys who just use their arms like windshield wipers. I can't stand it. They're trying to keep clean with long arms when they should be trying to, you know, use a telephone pole jab like Muhammad Ali or George Foreman with that long reach, and they just don't do it. He uses it well to dictate first contact. I thought he's extremely polished in terms of technique and diagnosis skills. Now, that's a good thing because, hey, he's at this level. It's also kind of a limiting factor to how much more he can grow at the NFL level because I think he has a lot of those tools in the kit already. 66 career coverage snaps as a 4-3 edge is not a lot to go on. So the question of whether or not he could be a Sam linebacker is an interesting one. He's only been targeted 4 times in total. One of the times he wasn't targeted, he batted down a pass, got an interception. He got another interception when he was targeted. So he's had unbelievably great results in a very, very small sample size of a career target. So the reason I go through that is because the Ravens might want to play Sam linebacker. He might make sense for that position. Get off is okay. I don't think it's elite. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. Got a nice powerful rip move that's kind of his go-to to win outside. Doesn't have the great bend that you see in some other pass rushers. And I'm sure you're going to talk about ankle flexion and some of the other things. I'll leave that for you. Finds the football well. I think it'll be a big asset against NFL option quarterbacks. So, you know, if it's zone blocking to the right and they're going through a mesh point and you want to know if Lamar Jackson has the quarterback or not, this might be a guy you'd want to have on the edge. What else is there? I think that's about it. I think he'd be a very solid intersection of need and value at number 59 for the Ravens. Particularly if they believe that he can play the Sam spot.
I have him number nine on my board. So we're just switched with Dewey Omalau and Jackson. Man, just the more I watched him, the more I liked him. And I just felt like this is maybe one of the safest players in the entire draft. In the past, when I watched him at Ohio State, I just thought he was too heavy. I thought he was too tight. I just was like, I just don't know. This year, he looked lighter. He was just springier, I thought, in all of his movements. He's not explosive off the snap. You're right. It's not like his get off is going to blow your mind. His bend and flexibility isn't going to blow your mind. But I think it's there. I think it's adequate. And the pad level is just so low. I think it's hard to hit him square as a rusher. Now, you just wish he had more 1v1 wins. He's not a great 1v1 win. I've got the deep bag. I'm going to take you apart as a rusher. He doesn't really play that way. He is really team first in all his principles. Every defense coordinator in this draft is going to love him. Everybody's going to want him on their team, especially when you talk about the character stuff and the work ethic and all that stuff with him. He's one of those top-notch guys that checks all those boxes for teams. The run defense stuff is as good maybe as anybody else in this class. So the floor is just so high. He's going to be able to play on the field. The question with him is sort of like, how good does it get, especially as a rusher, because of the things you mentioned. Like, I don't think there are unbelievable pass rush traits I probably talked about on this show with you, like the four pillars of pass rush athleticism that I believe are really important as it translates to the NFL, which is burst off the ball, like your first step explosiveness, not necessarily your snap timing. Some guys are bad at timing the snap and they get better at that over time. But when you move, how fast do you move? And then speed up the arc too. Do you, that first burst, does that continue as you move up the arc? For most guys, it does. For some guys, it doesn't as much. We'll probably talk about some guys today that it doesn't maybe as much as they continue up the arc. They lose some of that speed as they go to corner. Then you have to corner, right? Your flexibility is the third one, the third pillar. Like, I think being able to bend or lean the edge, I think, is important. Some guys, you know, Yannick Ngakoue wasn't a great bender, but he was a good leaner. Chandler Jones wasn't a great bender, but he was a good leaner. Like, he found ways to trim it and be able to corner anyway. And then change of direction, which actually I think I've sort of, I don't actually like using change of direction because I think change of direction sort of suggests that, like, I think it's more like stop, start, right? You jab step and then you accelerate another direction. So the ability to just change pace, I think, at a high level as a rusher, I think, and you've got kind of an advantage on your side that you're using deception in your footwork there. But I think those pillars are really important for a rusher. And I think he's just sort of adequate across the board on those things. But I don't think he's like so stiff he can't keep his balance around the edge or anything like that. There are examples of him ducking under guys as a rusher. You really have to watch almost every game. But when you get to the full summation of his snaps in the season, you see five or six examples where you're like, I think he actually can do this. Like, I think it's in there. The way they played him, just tighter, often from a 4-point, I think we didn't get to see all the traits all the time as a rusher. So I'm pretty excited about what will be in the NFL. I really kind of want to move him up, and I might actually do it before the end of the draft because the next guy's ahead of him. I just like am I think there's more traits there, but I'm like, are there really more traits there? And we'll talk about it. But he to me, I think when you get into 6 or 7, 8, 9 in this ranking, I think it's very, very tight. And I think the more I watched, the more I thought he's actually not bad. Like, he checks all the traits boxes, even if he doesn't check them as emphatically as some of the guys maybe ahead of him.
All right. Love that discussion of the four pillars. And we certainly got guys in this draft who are extraordinarily traitsy in terms of the first step. There's a couple of guys, one I can think of in particular that I just love, who has not yet learned to counter off speed. He wants to make every rush a speed rush. And those guys, when they get the proper coaching at the NFL level, they're going to be unbelievable counter players. There's no substitute for being a fast first step guy. And if you look at Adafi Owe, fantastic athlete, but that is the thing that's held him back, is a lousy first step has made him never the kind of dangerous pass rusher that he could be otherwise if he had the traits of one of the guys I really love in this draft. So we'll get to talking about him, but I love that explanation. So we've done 10 and 9 for both of us. Jump up to number 8 for you then.
Okay, number 8 for me is Shamar Stewart from Texas A&M. This one was really difficult for me because I think he has unbelievable traits. Like, it's not just testing and all that stuff. I know the testing was good and everything, but I mean, I don't feel like I have a lot of different things to say than other people do in his evaluation. It's pretty straightforward. He's extremely big. He's strong. He's explosive. He plays incredibly hard. He has no clue what he's doing on a football field. He doesn't finish. He doesn't really know how to beat guys 1v1. So there are a lot of like just massive extremes, right? Where it is kind of ground up type stuff for him as a player. You just have to decide how much you believe in kind of whether his abilities can be maximized in the NFL. But like, I'll give you an example. I mean, there was I forget who they were playing, but there's a jet play. He takes off the ball. They're running like an end around or something like that. They give him all the receiver. He hammers the receiver and forces a fumble. And there's a big scramble and they get the ball and he's going crazy. He never saw the receiver. He had no idea what the play was. He was just taking off up the field to try and rush the passer. So he gets credit for all this blowing this play up. He has no clue that that was the play. So it's just like he is maximum bull in a china shop. I don't think there's like no technique. Like, he just rams his body into people and falls on the ground all the time. But there's very little awareness. I'd say his block diagnosis and awareness is very poor. And so you are really betting on unbelievable traits. His burst off the ball for his size and the fact that he actually can corner. It's not like a bendy corner. It's just, I'm so explosive, I'm going to beat you to the edge. Yeah. And so because of that, there will be a good angle here. I think that kind of stuff is real with him. But yeah, I mean, he just has no production at all to go off of. So it gets into this debate and my internal debate. And once we get to the next guy on the list, I'll kind of clarify my internal debate over these guys who are all kind of similarly sized. But I just have a massive struggle right now with trying to figure out how much I want to bet on Shamar Stewart, because he is a kind of similar Adafi Owe type of comparison, that there was so little college production, but there were so many traits. And I was a bet on Owe guy. Like, you know, I think him getting to even where he's gotten in his career was kind of my, like, I think he could get there, and he's gotten there. And so he's proven me right. I didn't have like a first round grade in him, but I had a high second round grade. I think that's sort of what his value has been, sort of in that range as an NFL player. And so I think that, am I going to make another bet like that with Stewart, or am I done betting on those types? I think that's really where my struggle is. He's one of the hardest players in the entire draft to figure out, because it's actually easy to figure out who he was in college, I think, but really difficult to figure out, to know, because we don't know the person, whether he'll ever actually be able to get his traits to work or not. Whereas I thought with the way we could, a lot of guys never do. And so it's hard to know where to come down on him.
You know, this is extremely well said. Everything you went through, and I, one of the things I'm really latching onto, you just said a moment ago, which is it's hard to know who he is. I think the interview process would be very important for me. I'd want to know that this guy knows that he's not where he needs to be as a football player, that he's got so much work to do, and it would be one of the things I'd really want to hear. But he is so far away in every category, and he actually, I had to drop him off my list, and he is at number 11. On my list, but I had to drop him off for multiple reasons. One is fit with the Ravens, because I think he's a 4-3 guy. He's got zero career coverage snaps. So right there, he's not going to fit the Ravens' Sam linebacker need, even though he ran a 4.59 40. I mean, he can't do all this regular, you know, defensive lineman stuff.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis. So you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies. And let me tell you, takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company S.I. and its operating company 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Right, or defensive edge or stuff, right? He's not going to learn to be a coverage guy. You know, that's a bridge many, many times too far. Pass rush productivity was in the 70th percentile, extremely disruptive. His finish rate was 390th out of 408, and that's either sacks or quarterback hits divided by his total pressures. So fifth percentile for that. That's not going to get it done. Despite his length, which should make him a better tackler. I think he's one of the worst among the draftable players in this draft, draftable edge players in this draft. 26.9% career missed tackle rate. And he had 28 stops and 18 missed tackles in college, a 1.6-to-1 relationship. About 4-to-1 is maybe normal for the edges. There are some guys better. Tui is better, for example, but he's utterly terrible in that regard. Here's my big problem is the windshield wiper problem, is that he has 34 1/8-inch arms. He should be delivering a strike to that opposing tackle that immediately dictates that play and how he sets up his pass rush plan and all of that. He just does not do that. He's planned to keep the other guy off him. He's always, you know, hand fighting with him and not ever going on offense and going to the body. So that really bothered me. And he had problems with, you know, some good opponents, but shorter arm guys who will be playing tackle in the National Football League, like Will Campbell, he had problems with because, in part, I think because of that. Campbell's a good lineman. Don't get me wrong. He might be a good tackle. He'll certainly at least be a good guard if he plays in the NFL. But he's also a guy that I think traits wise, Stewart should match up pretty well against. You know, a shorter arm guy, he should really have problems. So she should really give him problems. You know, the other part of his problem is fit with the Ravens. He doesn't really fit the defense in a neutral game script. I'd love to have him on the field if you were ahead for 2 touchdowns. And that's what I think a lot of the guys, by the way, in this draft, they fall into this thing. If all you need to do is pin your ears back and go after the quarterback, Shamar Sturt's a fine option. If you need to figure out whether or not the ball it's going to be a run or pass, or if the quarterback's going to keep hold the football, Shamar Sturt's the last guy I want on the field in terms of trying to figure that out. So I think he goes to a 4-3 team. I think somebody else loves him a lot more than the Ravens. I would love to see what Chuck Smith could do with him in terms of improving his game as a pass rusher. I don't see it as a real natural fit.
You brought up a great point in his missed tackle rate. It is, I totally forgot to mention this. It's been a while since I watched, since I finished the edge guys. I forgot. I mean, it's unbelievable. PFF has him 35% missed tackle rate his 2022. That is jaw dropping. Like, even though he only played 416 snaps, that is unbelievable. The next year was 20%. He actually played a little bit less in 2023. He honestly improved as a player in 2024. We talk all about like the lack of production, which is very real. He was a way better player in 2024 than he was before that. So that is a notch in his favor, I think, and that he actually could continue to actually get better. But the finishing, 24% missed tackle rate. I mean, it's just like, it's hard to trust that anything you see, even if it gets better at actually beating blockers 1v1, which I think he really did in 2024, he just misses so many tackles. He's out of control in space all the time. And, you know, Jared Verse was a massive missed tackle guy in college. His numbers were insane. Missed a ton of tackles this past year. I mean, he finished with 4.5 sacks. He should have had like 15. He was totally dominant as a player, won defensive rookie of the year, and missed tons of tackles. So it's not like there's no path for a player like this. It's just, I wish there was more of the other stuff too with him that we don't necessarily sit and you brought up a good point too. Like, how do you trust him on the field for all three downs? It's one thing if he develops as a rusher, but if you're going to take this guy in the top 10, which is where he's being rumored right now, if you're going to take him there, you need to know that he's going to be more than a situational player for you. This is not a player that you're playing 25 snaps a game. This is a guy who's going to be a key piece of your defense. He's going to be a building block, pillar piece of your defense. And so, I mean, the fit stuff with the Ravens, you're exactly right about. But I think for any team that takes him, really, there's just a lot of red flags. And I think his ceiling is higher. I know his ceiling is higher than Tua Tagovailoa, and I know it's higher than Landon Jackson. I know it's higher than some of the guys ahead of him, probably even. But it just, there's still like this issue of like, man, the floor could be so low. Like, he could make me look so bad. And so I'm kind of a coward when it comes to him. I don't know where to land on him, to be honest.
All right. Life is good. So we're through the number 8 guy for you. We'll go to my number 8 guy, which is, okay, now I have trouble always pronouncing his name, but Princely Umanmielen or Umanmielen?
It's Umanmielen. I just practiced it for like a half hour one day. And it's
very good. Okay, so watch a good amount of his tape, and I want to go through this here, and let me get down to my notes on him here. Okay, Princely, there you are. Okay, athletic and productive edge, combined a high pass rush productivity with a high finish rate. Again, I really like that, and there aren't very many guys who did both this last year. 4.72 in the 40, 6.4, 2.44. He is 23 in April. That's one of the points in Stewart's favor, is he doesn't turn 22 until November. So if you've got a 3-year project of turning him around – I still wouldn't want to do it with a first round draft pick, but I understand why somebody would. He had outstanding jumps, which you see in a lot of the edge players. The third highest pass rush productivity among all edges, with 200 plus pass rush steps, the 99th percentile there, and the 91st percentile in finish rate, with 49.1% of his pressure events going for either quarterback hits or sacks. 27 stops with only 4 missed tackles, an outstanding 6.8-1 relationship. He's got 125 career drops to coverage, something I looked at very closely for the Ravens' needs, of course. He's allowed 8.1 yards per target. There's not enough information there, but he's a very tall drink of water, very tall, thin guy, long-armed, almost 34 inches there. He'd be quite a presence underneath. Reminds me maybe of a even more rail-thin Tyus Bowser in terms of a guy I look at and I say he should be able to learn how to cover. Obviously, he's got other things he needs to focus on first. In terms of how he deals with opponents, he does a very good job of shedding with long arms, and he does it usually by extension, bench pressing that guy off his body, which I do like to see. It's maybe not the ideal thing because usually that's a guy who's over relying on the bull rush. I also like to see a guy with violent hands, which he has, but who likes to go single arm long into the player to make his move. I think that has, we call that hand placement. If the guy can maintain rigidity there and keep himself from being knocked off because his placement is good, you end up not even seeing that hand placement necessarily when you watch film. You watch the other guy flailing and being unable to do anything as he turns the corner on that. So I'd like to see more of that from him than just a two-handed extension. Has a very good get off. He often tries to win with speed. It's too much for a lot of tackles, and that's true certainly at the college level. He's going to run into a lot more impactful 12-6 blockers at the NFL level, who even with when he gets to start with speed at his kind of size, weighing 244 pounds, he's going to get blocked south of the pocket, and he may or may not have the juice or the time to get back into that play. He has a spin move. That's really his most common inside counter to win with. He's been fairly successful with that, I would say. What I was really impressed with, and I did not expect to see, was that I think he denies space very well, pass or run. He pinches. It's like an edge setting ability where he's not even necessarily bench pressing the guy, but he's pushing the guy with almost a speed of power, a power move to close that space in the B gap, such that his outside arm remains free and that B gap is being closed. So great space denial ability there and real fine closing speed from the backside. Looks like could be Sam given the measurables. Would love to see him with a bigger toolkit as a pass rusher. When he was not hurt and he's had a couple of minor injuries, he was good for 45 snaps per game. So he's one of a number of players I'd really love for the Ravens at 59. I think he'd be a great pickup there.
Yeah, really good fit for Baltimore. He's actually the next guy on my list anyway, so we continue to do this, but he's seventh for me. He honestly is probably should be higher than this if he were more consistent, in my opinion. I would probably have him, and we'll get to who I have just above him, but I could see him as high as fifth, and I could also see him being in the tier below this based on like his worst reps and the fact that I don't know that they trusted him a ton against the run. Like, I think that part for him is a bit of a question mark at Ole Miss. I think there are some, I don't factor this into my evaluations, but there's been some maturity questions with him over the years too, that, I think going to Baltimore would actually probably help, probably be a great landing spot for him personally. I felt like when I watched him, he's a pace changer type of player. Like, he likes to change the pace, which sometimes means he comes off the ball very slow. And sometimes he comes off very fast. And you really have no idea what to expect from him. His greatest weapon is his unpredictability as a rusher, I think. You're not quite sure what to expect. He's got this unbelievable inside spin counter move. So no matter what he gets you to do, as soon as he gets you to commit, he toys with blockers. That's what he does more than any other rusher in the class. I think he just toys with blockers. Now, I don't know that he has the unbelievable traits, but they're all good enough too. If he turns the corner for a while, you'll see he's just not fast enough to the corner. Like, he's never going to get there. Why does he keep trying? And then he's setting up a move. And like later in the game, he goes to it. It's like, oh man, like, so he's one of these guys that I like, just like his best reps are so good where you're like, man, is he just going to mess around too much for some coaches? Like, is he going to be a fit for everybody? But I don't know. And the testing was weird too. Like everything about the pre-draft process has been weird, right? He's listed at like 267 or something like that. He comes into the combine in the pro day and he's 244 at the combine, 241 at the pro day. And it's like, how light are you here? It just, the whole thing reminds me a ton of Arden Key, where there were these, can he play every down? He looks like he has like pass rush juice on tape, but then his testing isn't great. His weight's all over the place. Arden Key was like a two, is he 270 or something? Then he shows up, he's like 235 at the combine. Everybody's like, what in the world? He's like, yeah, I just haven't eaten. And it's, and there's all these maturity questions. Like, but then he gets to the NFL and Arden Key's just a really great situational pass rusher. And he's going to help out. He's just going to keep rotating to all these teams that need pass rush help. And he's going to be a great, like long and late downs guy. I don't know if Umon Mielen is ever going to be a three down, just constant 50, 60 reps a game type of player. The guys that are probably have behind him will probably play more snaps per game. But will many guys be more impactful? At the end of the day, are we going to look up and he's going to have 10, 11 sacks every year in a situational pass rush role that these teams that we're talking about, the 49ers, the Chiefs, the Eagles, the Bills, these teams that want to go four down and go and rush the passer every year and know that they need that, like the Ravens being one of those teams as well. Like, are they going to get a ton of value out of him, even if he plays technically less snaps? That's sort of where I'm at with him, where I think he's just really insightful in how he rushes the passer. There's probably more traitsy guys in terms of like pure athleticism and just blur speed and like all this stuff. But I just think he's a cerebral guy and then he's got enough traits too. And he just makes it work as a pass rusher in a way that's really intriguing to me.
You know, those are all great points. I will say rotational teams would be a great landing spot for him. And the Ravens don't have anybody who plays more than 56% of the snaps at edge. Yeah. So, yeah, that's this is a common thing for 4-3 teams is that they tend to overplay all four of their guys more. And the Steelers, boy, have they done that a lot with guys over the years. They've had superstars at those four positions, but they've asked a lot in terms of top snap count from those four guys. You know, Cam Hayward is still playing a large number of snaps at his age, even. And Aaron Smith and Kiesel and guys like that played a lot of snaps all through their careers. It's a position where I really believe in rotation. I really like, I think you, when you have an edge group, you really need a four to make two edge group, not even a three to make two edge group. And the Ravens have done pretty well in getting three on the field when they have four, and sometimes four on the field when they have five, when they're playing some race car packages in years when they've had the lead before. But anyway, love Princely for that, and I'd love to see him at 59. Now, you mentioned he's your number seven guy, right?
He's my seven, yep. So are you ready for my six?
No, we're ready for my seven first.
Oh, your seven. That's right. Yeah. We haven't gotten to your seven yet. Yeah.
So my number seven guy is Braden Swinson of LSU, and I got to get down to him here for a second. So I did not think I would like him as much as I did. And then I watched his tape and there's a lot of things I really like. First of all, I think he's one of the most clear Sam Fitz of anybody that's out there. Very solid pressure rate, lots of upside to grow his toolkit. I think he had really good pass rush protection. It was eighth among 408 at 11.6, but a 28.3% finish rate is below average. Now, I don't have any problem with that at all. Pressure rate, that's what the Ravens need now, is first pressures. And with the first pressures they get from other spots, most notably players like Jones and Matabike, they're going to have good options for edges to get some cleanup plays that I think will make it a little easier for him than it maybe was at LSU. His tackling took a step back this last year, 15% missed tackle rate. His stops remained good, however, at 31, very mediocre 3.4-1 relationship. He does have 154 career coverage snaps, more than respectable results now. 154 coverage snaps, 4.9 yards per target, and 68.0 opposition passer rating. You almost never get that sort of a sample size on a guy who might be a stand up, a drop off the line of scrimmage, Sam linebacker. That's very good evidence. And that's probably the reason I have him ranked as high. It wouldn't surprise me if you had him lower. He does have some good ball production, 5 forced fumbles career. He didn't become a full-time player until this last college season. So the fifth season, that's going to be a big knock for some people. He was very effective versus Ole Miss and Jackson Dart in getting after him. He beat both tackles, very high motor player. I thought he had good containment of run and option plays, meaning he's not getting fooled out of the gate and then he's chasing him well down the line of scrimmage, did well. He uses kind of a bull and shed technique a lot of the time. So really tries to bull his man either into the quarterback or just to one side of the quarterback so he can shed him and get his hands on the QB. He gets blocked 12-6, a little more than I would like. His frame has something to do with that. He's 6'4", 255. He's not a super light guy, but he's not one of these, you know, 265 or 270 pound monsters that we have in this draft. And I think if I were to say what he needs more, it's something I think the Ravens can give him. I think he needs more in terms of half man moves and the counters to go with them. I think he's probably got the traits for it. He's a little slow in terms of his 40 time, but I think his get off is okay, such that he can be maximized by a Chuck Smith. So mostly I love him for his Sam traits in addition to good pass rush productivity in school. And I was actually real surprised that I thought he was as good as that.
I absolutely love Braden Swinson. He's okay, one of my favorite players in the entire class. He's fifth for me, actually. I am just a big, big, big fan of the game. I think that he is truly one of the most explosive guys in the class. Off the ball, just really erupts into the backfield, erupts off the line of scrimmage. Play demeanor is just next level, nasty, violent, aggressive. Sometimes to his detriment. Abdul Carter has this too. They will sometimes run themselves to the ground or they'll get around their opponent. It's like one or the other, right? Like they might fall cornering, but they are relentless in whatever they do. And Swinson is not as athletic as Carter. Nobody is really, but I think that what you see from him as a high side rusher combined with the speed to power conversion, I think he's probably the best bull rusher in the class. There's bigger guys, but just the burst and he just goes right through people's chests, just detonates the pocket. I think he knocks guys right back into the quarterback's lap. I absolutely love his speed to power conversion. I think that he's a peak violence and aggression player. Like I said, even sometimes to his detriment, but almost every offensive lineman in every game, he rocks them at some point. And he doesn't even have like a body type where you'd be like, oh yeah, this is his thing. People questioned like how big he was going to be. I think he came in with 250 at the combine, when he was there. Yeah. 255 at the combine. So it's a great, great weigh in for him. I think he's got the length. He's got the wingspan. I think he's got the athleticism. I don't think he's like some freak, but just with how hard he plays and how fast he is off the ball, that's the key trait for him. Just, he is enough of everything else that with how explosive he is off the ball, especially when his feet's right and he's got the timing down and everything. It's just like those pass obvious situations. He is just a true danger. I think he's a little bit all over the place against the run, but it's not for like the fact that he can't do stuff. Like he can absolutely do stuff. Like, I mean, some of his awareness finding the ball in unblocked situations is just next level. He makes some of the highest end plays against the run that you'll see just in space. Big hits on guys. He is not a soft tackler in any sense of the word. Like his urgency and his technique on taking on pullers, he'll wrong arm guys, he'll spill runs to his teammate. There's no plays off. He had a play against Baylor where he just takes, he's on the opposite side of the field and they throw a screen out to the other side and the receiver kind of cuts back middle and is taking it to the house and he just chases this guy down at like the 5 yard line. It's just like an unbelievable hustle play. So, you know, the Brugler, who I think does awesome work, put in the Beast, which is his unbelievable draft guy that's out there. Everybody should check out that. You know, there's times where he quote unquote butted heads with coaches a few times. The interview process is going to be key for him. He was suspended for the first quarter of the 2024 Florida game for not meeting team standards. So there's some unknowns there. I don't know the guy. I've talked to Dane about him and what he's heard from teams. I know that little bit. Like I said, I don't put those things in my evaluation. I just say them for the context of this, so your listeners will kind of know that there is some stuff out there with him. But in terms of the game, what I see on the field, I think he's really outstanding. And I got to him pretty early in the process, and I was kind of one of the, wait, why is Braden Swinson so low for everybody? Like pretty much everybody, the consensus board, if you look at it, has all the guys we've talked about, you know, already ahead of him. He's behind, you know, he's in the teens for most people. And I think he's one of the better pass rushers in this class.
Cool. Cool that you have him higher than me. I really was expecting the opposite, but that's fantastic.
I'm unpredictable.
There you go. That's what we want. We want to, I was just on a 2 hour show today. I got to say somebody else's pod. And we talked about eight players. And by the end of the thing, I'm wondering, did you already like listen to my shows on these guys? And you know, I have some kind of a polar view. And you know, one of the players we talked about, I think, was Shamar Stewart. And you know, almost every one is like I'm fighting cats and dogs with the other guy about it. It's not bad. This is a guy I spend a lot of camp together at Ravens camp talking with, but boy, it could be exhausting. This is just the opposite. It's great to hear this. Why don't we, since we're going so well on time, why don't we go ahead with your number six guy and leave ourselves a little more time for honorable mentions in part two?
Sure. Yeah. Number six for me is Mykel Williams from Georgia. One of the hardest players in the entire class to evaluate, whereas Stewart is hard to project. I think Mykel Williams is hard to evaluate because Georgia played him like a lot in the four eye and a lot inside the tackle or tight to the tackle, a lot of run reads, kind of square stance, not really firing off the ball. And unlike Landon Jackson, you didn't get who saw a lot of the similar usages. You didn't get the pass obvious tee off and go rushes from Williams as much. So because of that, we're kind of missing things in his evaluation that we need. He also was hurt last year. So it becomes a really hard thing to say how much of a pass rush force can he actually be off the edge. I think the floor is really high. He uses his length super well, super physical player, gets into guys' pads, bench presses guys off his frame. I'd say he's one of the better run defenders in this class, along with Tui Maloau. I think that his play demeanor, his urgency, I think all that kind of stuff like is where you want it to be. The real question with Mykel Williams is just who is he as a rusher? How fast does he become that player in the NFL? Because he didn't get a ton of chance to at Georgia to really tee off out there. The missed tackle rate is super high for him as well. Like, can that come down over time? So this is sort of this tier, which we're all still in the same tier for me. Landon Jackson, Tui Maloau, Shamar Stewart, Umanmi Allen, Williams, they're all in the same tier for me. I cannot tell you how many times I've gone back and forth over every player in this draft, in this tier, and just who belongs where. Like, if you told me Tui Maloau has a better career than Mykel Williams, and he's even better right off the bat, I would not be surprised at all. Like, I think there's a real chance that that's the case. So I like this player a lot. I think there are enough flashes when he does get to go where the long arm is going to be a great weapon for him. The cross chop should be a great weapon for him. He's never going to like be the blur speed bend guy. And I think that's fine. How fast can he get off the ball when he plays more from a 3-point, or will he ever play from a 2-point like that? You know, is he that kind of an athlete? There's just enough that we don't know. And then he does the testing and, you know, there's still some questions. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, he didn't do any drills at the combine, and then he runs at his pro day, and it sounds like 4.77 is kind of where the official number came in at 267 pounds, so he's bigger. You know, the 10 yards, it's just very average, and he didn't do any of the agility, he didn't do any of the jumps. He still got this ankle, and that's a problem. So there's just a lot of unknowns with him that I would really want to be invested in the interview process as a team. I'd want to be invested in the behind the scenes stuff. And they say good things about him from a character perspective, which is big. And so I think the unknowns with Mykel Williams scare me. The frame is awesome. The floor I think is awesome. Can the ceiling be what I hope it can be? He's just such a more stable player than Shamar Stewart that I feel like having him over Stewart makes sense to me. But Tui Maloau is a more stable player. Like, should I have him higher? So this is just sort of to bring people behind the curtain of the process. Umanmi Allen is a totally different type of player than these guys. Like, I feel way better about his pass rush ability, but I also think he could if he ends at the wrong team, they could be like, yeah, you're not doing everything we want you to do. We don't want you on the field because you're not the three down guy. And some teams won't care about that. So it becomes, I think really it's splitting hairs with a lot of these guys. And it's really a matter of like, how much faith are you willing to have in a Stewart or a Williams who didn't really show it, you know, versus some of the guys that showed it a lot more, but could like maybe have a lower floor and somebody like Umanmi Allen. So it is a very hard tier to sort out. I feel really confident this is a tier, but it's a very hard tier to sort out.
So Mykel Williams, my number 12 guy for starters. Some of this was fit. Some of this was usage at Georgia. Here's the really weird thing about his usage at Georgia. You're not incorrect. And I think I observed on tape that he's kind of a naturally patient edge setting guy, is kind of the nature I see. He certainly has the length to do. I think he's the longest guy in this draft at 34 3/8. So he's, you know, huge arms and the kind of guy you'd love to have setting the edge. His pass rush productivity is in the 73rd percentile. His finish rate was in the 78th percentile. Both good, not elite in either. That's fine. That's plenty to build on. It's a good place. He had actually a very good stops to missed tackle ratio, as I got it from PFF. If you have another source for missed tackles, that might be different. But 46 to 9.
No, you're actually right. Sorry to interrupt. You're actually right about that. I was looking at the wrong profile when I said that. I was looking at Stewart's again.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that would explain it.
That's my problem.
Yeah. Now, here's the funny thing. And you can look if you got Michael Williams up there. He played 63% of his downs as a pass rush, as a pass guy. And that's like the highest in the entire draft. 65% for his career. There's like literally go through all this entire list of top draftable players. Nobody got more of an opportunity in theory to play pass snaps. Now, some of that is going to be because George is ahead in games. And at the end of games, they're going to be facing teams that pass a lot more on first down and whatnot. But still, a guy who had certainly some opportunities, not necessarily all that he was greenlit on. What I really liked about him, if you go through the year and look at his pass and run snaps as they went down the early year, totally dominant in terms of being on the field for pass snaps. As the year went on, played a lot more run snaps. So Georgia figured something out about it. Might have been the injury that caused this, but it might have been something about they decided he was the right guy for run plays. And in watching him play, that's what I seem to see. He's a little slow in terms of his get off, and that may be something that'll hamper him in his career. Very patient containment on the backside of run plays. Plays very nice natural leverage of long arms. You love that for an edge setter. You also love it for a pass rusher if you can do anything with it, if you can really turn that into value. He definitely has stretches in effectiveness, but then against Texas, and they have Kelvin Banks, you know, is there. He had four sacks, at least contributions to four sacks, let me put it that way, in the two games against Texas. So that's certainly impressive in terms of you know, biggest stage kind of performances. For the Ravens, though, with only, what was it, 9 career coverage snaps, I think he's probably not a Sam. I wouldn't take that gamble, even though, boy, really traitsy guy. He's just a little bit on the slow side, so he probably ends up being a rush outside linebacker. Guy who can move inside for sure, I think, on nickel snaps, if you guy could help you there. Definitely worth a gamble, but if he falls to 59, I definitely do not see that happening. I think he could get drafted in the first round. I think he almost certainly gets drafted in the second round if he doesn't get drafted in the first round. But, you know, a guy from a traits perspective, I love it. I'd be incredibly excited on draft day if he fell to 59, the Ravens picked him up.
Yeah, that's the interesting part is the fit and just it's so – because what is his pass rush potential? That everybody wants to find a pass rusher. It sure sounds like he's getting drafted in the top 20, so obviously it seems like there's enough teams at least that believe – that his pass rush potential is for real. They're going to take him there. I just go back and forth between it a lot. And like, should I have him over Princely? Because Princely actually has shown the pass rush stuff, but then I worry that Princely's not going to be on the field. And so anyway, this tier is a really hard one to break up. If you ask me just like before we move out of this tier, but like who's my favorite guys just on tape from this tier? Like who are the guys I actually like the most? I would say Michael Williams and Shamar Stewart would be at the bottom of this tier. Mm-hmm. Now you take other things into account, which I'm trying to do. And perhaps in doing that, I'm overthinking it. But Princely and Tui Moloa were my favorite guys in this tier to watch. And I liked the reps of Landon Jackson where he actually played the position that he was supposed to play. So perhaps I'm overthinking it by having Michael Williams ahead of those guys when I actually didn't like them as much on tape. But I do think traits matter at this position. I do think there are a lot of things about him that are explainable from this past season. You mentioned some of the pass rush stuff. Yeah, I think the teams threw a lot in situations against them, in my anecdotal observations, that weren't really pass obvious situations. And I think in part was to keep them from sending some of their blitzes that they have and preventing Georgia from using Walker as effectively as they did. So they tried to invert the down on them a little bit. And I think a lot of his reps, he's inside. I don't think he's really an inside rusher. Like, I'm not that excited about him right now, maybe eventually in that role. So that's sort of just like, I think that he's a hard player to figure out, and maybe I'm overthinking by thinking that there's a little more meat on the bone than what he showed at Georgia. It wouldn't be the first time that they've done that with some of their guys. Just, yeah, hey, buy into our team concept and play, you know, 300, 400 snaps and you're actually a top 20 draft pick. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. I've truly not understood how Georgia uses many of their players over the years. They're obviously good, so they figured it out, but you know, they have a lot of good guys. But I am not quite sure, like with him, where the ceiling is at. And I think I'm honestly maybe frustrated enough by the fact that like I'm doing a private workout and it just came out yesterday that I think it was yesterday. He's doing a private workout and he's not doing any testing. I'm like, okay. Like it just feels like now he's healthy enough. Like before it was like, now he's healthy enough. He's still not. So I think in my final board, I'm going to end up coming down on him just a little bit more because I have to have a little bit more to believe in. Like, what is it that I believe in if I'm going to say he's that kind of a rusher? So one of the effectiveness of talking through it sort of a little bit is kind of coming to some of these conclusions, but it's just been a little frustrating. We haven't got a clear picture of what his ceiling might be during the pre-draft process. I really hoped for that.
Now, let me just go off schedule here a little bit. And, you know, Wilson had that workout, the Michigan cornerback, on 4:14, and he again did not run. Reportedly was trying to run the 40, running in the high 4.5s, thought it was a better idea not to run, and hurt his draft stock, is the story I keep hearing. How far does he fall because of that? Because, you know, he was a guy easily could have been a top 15 pick.
Yeah, I think it sounds like, just based on the reporting out there, the teams are a little bit concerned that perhaps he is not going to be a first round pick. Like, they're just concerned enough about his speed, concerned enough about the injuries maybe that, like, and to be honest, he plays in a very, like, he doesn't play a lot of press. Now, if you go back to 2023, you'll see some more press man, but you don't see a lot of the man coverage stuff. You don't see a lot of the press and turn stuff from him. He's off the ball. He's really good in the read game for sure. He can attack it, but I do think that there's, like, enough of a question with him, like, how broad is the scheme he fits in? How great of an athlete is he? Is there an injury history that teams, he may fall a little bit in the draft.
All right. So I misspoke, by the way. It's not Wilson, it's Will Johnson. Sounds like you knew exactly what I meant. Thanks for not correcting me on that. I always, yeah. always had to, I'm getting to that age where I come up with the wrong name a lot, unfortunately, but that's the way life works. Fantastic discussion, John. Really appreciate all your insights, new stuff. And lots of very cool stuff. Tell folks where they can find your work online.
Yeah, you can find my stuff, Audibles and Analytics. Audibles and Analytics is the name of my Substack. And that's where all my work is. So you can subscribe there, $5 a month or $50 for the year. Pretty easy. And all my scouting reports are on there. So everybody we talked about, I've got scouting reports on there. I have a top 20 edge defender rankings and tiers on there that obviously I'm still like trying to finalize in my mind because this is what I do. I torture myself over all this stuff. But you can find all that stuff on there. You can find scouting reports, all my notes, all my fits and everything like that for players on the site there. And then Ollie Connolly and I, on that same Substack, you can find our podcast. This time of year, it's really almost all draft stuff and NFL stuff for me. And so it's, I mean, every position group so far, we've gone through every position group in the draft and we've broken down our evaluations. We actually have a two-part on edge defenders. It's like 4 hours in total, I think.
Wow.
We're talking about the edge defender class. And so we have like a two-part podcast on those that we do. We broke down all these guys and way more in detail too. So there's a lot of this stuff. I mean, every position group, like I said, we'll do linebackers early next week and finish it out before the draft, but we're getting there. We're moving through the class, trying to be like 150, 200 deep, not as much as when I did this full time, but still pretty good. So people are interested in my thoughts and opinions on some of these players. We have quite a few off the beaten path takes in this draft. And so if people are interested in that kind of stuff, Audibles and Analytics is the place to check it out.
All right. Outstanding, John. Other folks out there want to make sure we plug the draft night coverage. All three nights will be on, or night day, until the Ravens make their very final pick, including 8 day 3 picks, folks. So make your plans for Saturday to be with us on that stream. We have that interactive format. I have a lot more information and metrics by players as we go through and we have players selected. Lots of different metrics to see how well do these players really stack up against the other college players and how might they project to the pros. John, really appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely, Ken. Thanks so much for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
A new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply.